Welcome to the Chasing Brighter podcast.
You're about to go on a journey of self-discovery as we chase a brighter you. Every single week, we will bring you new episodes that will cover everything from lifestyle and tips to more serious conversations about grief, life, and hardships.
Allow this show to be a reminder to always keep chasing a brighter version of you. Let's get into it.
Welcome to today's episode, Midlife Mavericks. We're going to be talking about women who have redefined success because March is Women's History Month and we wanted to celebrate that. And the women we're going to talk about today, their stories demonstrate that midlife career changes, success at midlife can lead to remarkable achievements and serve as an inspiration for anyone who's considering a new path later in life. So Kelly and I had homework and we each had to do a history report on some women. So, Kel,
yeah.
Did you get an A+ in U.S. history today or what?
It was fascinating. I haven't done this in a while. I had a hard time picking a woman, but I was trying to pick women that I knew, that I think about often. And one of the first women that I had chosen was Marie Curie. So first of all, do you remember when you were in fourth or fifth grade or whatever it was, and you had to do a book report on a person and you would go to the library in the school. This is when we lived in Pueblo, I remember. And it was always there was these little books about a person, right? So Marie Curie and Clara Barton were two that I had done something.
Clara Barton sounds familiar. I must have done something.
She's the founder of the American Red Cross. I didn't put her on here, although she definitely is one of my heroes because I do have this affinity toward American Red Cross. And I don't do jack right now with it. But Marie Curie, amazing woman who originally was from Poland.
Okay. What years was she alive?
1867 to 1934.
Okay.
And really, she was a scientist. She was a chemist. Her husband and her were both chemists. They discovered radium and polonium. And actually, the interesting part about her discovery of polonium is that it was actually named after Poland, her homeland. So that's
cool. And she lived longer than I thought for some reason, because I know she died of radiation poisoning. I thought she was like 30, but I'm like, she was 70-ish.
Yeah. So
that's old.
They were doing experiments on nuclear waste. So like when they were mining for uranium for nuclear stuff back in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah.
They were taking their waste and they were taking the uranium waste or the like ground that they were digging in, and they were trying to get, that's how they found radium, as radium was actually in that material as well.
Okay.
People cared about uranium. So
yeah,
they were dealing with nuclear waste for all those years. So like they essentially whittled away to nothing.
Yeah.
Which is amazing that she had children during that time. She had two kids during that time. When she won her first Nobel Prize, her husband actually was nominated and she wasn't. And he wrote the committee to say, I won't accept this without my wife. She won her, really late 30s into her 40s is when she started to make a name for herself. And what's also interesting about her as a person is she never really, she was in it for the pure science part. And so they never really they didn't patent anything or make millions off of things like today, like Bill Gates patenting Microsoft instead of making that an open platform or something like that kind of a thing where they probably could be bajillionaires. Her husband died because they both were so weak, but he tripped and fell on a street in Paris, I think, and was sucked for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was an interesting woman just because she faced a tremendous amount of gender discrimination, not to mention that she was Polish. So she was an immigrant. And a lot of people looked down upon her and even spread rumors that she was Jewish because they even thought that was worse. So not only was she an immigrant, but she was a Jew at the time, which everyone thought was not a good thing, right? So she has a misconception, but really she, in a lot of ways, is the pioneer of STEM, right? And women in engineering and women in science. Yeah. And she was really passionate about that. So I appreciate that part of who she was.
And even today, we're growing, but there aren't as many women in science. So to think, my gosh, that was like 100 years ago. What an incredible feat for her to rise that we still talk about her to this day.
Yeah.
One of the things in my research that was so surprising, you and I love fashion. So talking about Vera Wang, who was born in 1949, did you know that she was a figure skater?
I had no idea. No.
And she, after failing to make the U.S. Olympic team, so she was like a very high level figure skater, she shifted her focus to fashion journalism and eventually became the youngest ever editor at Vogue, which is crazy. And it wasn't until she was 40 that she started designing wedding gowns. And she was filling what she saw as a gap in the market for modern luxurious bridal wear. Where if you think about it, that's about 89, early 90s. It was still lace, poofy, giant dresses.
Yes,
and
yeah,
so she really
that,
came
yeah.
with that sleek silhouette mm-hmm. of a modern gown. She created that and started that. That was her brainchild. And today, Vera Wang is one of the most prominent names in bridal fashion, with her designs gracing countless celebrity weddings and red carpets. She also has lines. I know she has lines of clothing at Kohl's.
She
Vera
makes
Wang's
some
been
really
there for
good
a minute.
Bath towels.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now she's all over the place.
Yes.
Starting from a young figure skater to not even beginning design till 40, which is just amazing
yeah.
to me. And so I thought that was really cool and something that I didn't know about.
Yeah, I love that one. The next person that I found interesting is Eleanor Roosevelt. So, you know, first lady to Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And while she might have grown up in a more prominent family, really, it wasn't until she became first lady that she really started to, she obviously had a position, she was a public figure, and she was able to use that for good. The first lady before her were just arm candy, if you will. They didn't really have a lot of involvement. Now, some may have, and you could argue different people. But at the end of the day, she was one of the ones who really became an advocate.
And it was my understanding that there was almost like a partnership from the beginning of her union.
Yeah, there is
marriage.
A lot of speculation about
yeah.
that. Although they said it was a loveless marriage, they had 6 kids. So
yeah.
there had to be something there that allowed them to make a large family. But she was very much involved in human rights, social justice, women's rights. She was involved in the UN and really changed a lot of things on a global stage. She wasn't afraid to speak out, but she could, though, too. She was a public figure. I'm sure she had she faced a lot of adversity on her own. She grew up without parents. Her parents both died when she was young. And then her husband, FDR, cheated on her, which was also an embarrassment for her.
Yeah.
There's
he publicly stepped out on her.
Yes.
I think there was
there's actually speculation that I'm going to say she was bisexual.
Yeah. I didn't read the book Eleanor, which I really want to, but I saw that as well, that they both, it was presented to me, one rumor or speculation was that like it was a partnership. They each had their own, what do I want to say, mistresses. The entire time they were married, because
okay.
it was really just like they were friends and it was like a good union because they came from good families.
Okay, maybe that's the case.
And that
I didn't
she had some girlfriends. Yeah.
I got the sense, I think she had a lot of strong friendships, but I don't think yeah. she had a BFF, a very close
yeah.
person that ended up moving into the White House or was a permanent guest in the White
yeah.
House. And so I got the sense that was like later on in her life. But
yeah.
regardless, she was really a tremendous role model for human
yeah.
rights,
yeah.
political and social involvement. And I think in a lot of ways may have laid the groundwork for a lot of future first ladies and their own endeavors.
Absolutely. You know? She's incredible. She was incredible. One of the women that I pulled up was Julia Child. Did you watch the movie
Love
Julie
her.
And
yes.
Julia? Okay.
Yeah.
And you know that she wouldn't speak on it, and the real Julie emailed her or messaged her and tried to see her, and she refused to see her. So I don't even know if she liked that show, but
the
she
book
was
too right. Life
right,
of
right.
Julie
the movie,
whatever,
yeah, and
yeah.
the book, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. And she was born in 1912, and she is known and celebrated as a culinary icon who revolutionized American cooking and popularized French cuisine. And so her story is so fascinating. So she grew up very privileged. At that time, college degree, had a cook when she was growing up, not necessarily into cooking growing up. And she joined the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, in 1942.
Which is the predecessor to the CIA.
Yes.
She was a CIA agent. Yeah.
Because she was not allowed to join the Women's Army Corps because she was too tall. because she was 6'2". And our grandmother was in the Women's Army Corps, or the U.S. Navy was called the Waves. And she was not allowed that because she was too tall. So she started with the OSS as a typist. But because of her education experience, soon she was given like a position as a top secret researcher, like working directly for the head of the OSS. She became like a research assistant to the Secret Intelligence Division. It was amazing. And so from 44 to 45, she was posted in Asia. She was all over the place. She met her husband while they both were serving in the government. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until she was in post-war France in 1951 that she went to the famous Cordon Bleu cooking school in Paris.
And she was looking for something to do, right?
Yeah.
Because Paul was working and yeah.
Yeah. Super and so despite initially having no culinary training, her passion for cooking led her to publish her groundbreaking cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And then she eventually, and I remember grandma having her on TV, became famous with her television show, The French Chef. So that's crazy because she was like 49 and started cooking. Can you imagine you and I, like, because you and I talk about all the different classes and trainings we want to have, that because I want to do like a barista training. Oh, then I became a barista and have 12 coffee shops.
It's on
I don't
my
know.
Bucket
it's just kind of amazing.
Just, I got to do it.
Yeah. It's just like really amazing that, like you and I talk all the time, like she went toward her passion. She wasn't like, oh, I need to change my career and become a chef. She was like, oh, let me just find something to do. Oh, hey, we're in Paris. I love the food here. Let me learn how to cook French meal. To then just by following her passion, just becoming world renowned cook and cookbook author.
She is synonymous with being a gourmet.
Yeah.
Cook.
Yeah.
In some ways, HGTV, Food Network, like have these
Food Network for sure. Thanks,
wouldn't
Juliet.
Exist
yeah.
cooking.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I never follow an actual assignment, but I want to throw in a third one just because Laura Ingalls Wilder, was she like a huge author for you as a kid?
She was not just.
Are you
I didn't. I wasn't a reader. I was.
Her book
reader.
Little House was like mind blown.
That was your jam.
But she did not begin writing her iconic novels until she was in her mid 60s.
Wow.
She lived to be 90, and it was just crazy. She had a ton of occupations. She was a teacher, a farmer's wife, a newspaper columnist. Her late career transitioned to authorship. Her books have captivated generations of readers. The Little House series, I think because we lived in Kansas, just to read those books about how people lived on the prairie. I just loved all those books. I did watch Little House on the Prairie, the show.
Yes.
And so that just is fascinating to me. You and I, another thing on our list, authors. So yeah. We have like 20 more years. We don't even start writing until we're in our 60s, Kelly. So that was just inspiring.
Yeah, no, amazing for her to write about her own experiences. And for sure, just what an icon.
Yeah.
Right, in terms of not being a writer.
And these five remarkable women, right, hopefully hearing their stories is inspiring to you and brings some insight into it. It's never too late to follow your passion. Sometimes it's not overnight success. If you are following your passion and working, success can come at any age.
Yeah. And I think all of these women really define courage, right? They had some visions along the way and what remarkable achievements they didn't get without that courage and about just keeping pushing forward. I can't imagine with Julia Childs, like what each of these individuals, the adversity they may have faced along the way.
Having 6'2 in Europe. Yeah. In Asia. She was in Asia, working in Asia. It's a big old tall white woman.
Yeah, yes.
I'm sure. Yeah. And again, all of these women faced a lot of adversity. But I think when you're following your passion, when you're following your joy, when you're doing what you love, it's easier to stay focused and stay the course.
Thanks for listening today. Don't forget to subscribe so you can hear our latest episodes as soon as they drop.
If you loved today's episode, share with a friend. Come visit us on Instagram or Facebook. Make sure to give us a follow. We have lots of giveaways. If you want to know more about Kelly and I, read our blogs, find more tips, tools, and resources, check that out at chasingbrighter.com. Thanks.